The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. In the lion's roar of Queen Shrimala, we have had the queen make her 10 ordination vows, and then what are called the three great aspirations: to attain or to comprehend, to realize the wisdom of the Dharma, to explain and or teach it to innumerable sentient beings, to embrace, uphold, and protect the illustrious doctrine. These become the aspirations of the Bodhisattva, and in the sutra, the Buddha confirms this by saying that these vows, speaking of the three great aspirations, are so vast, they exceed the number of sands on the banks of the river Ganges, which is a huge river. He says, just as all forms are contained in the realm of space, so all the Bodhisattva's vows, as numerous as the sands of the Ganges, are contained in these vows. These three vows are truly vast. So here, Queen Trimala's vows become the Bodhisattva's vows. And in the sutra, the Buddha makes the direct, through his words, makes the direct connection between what Queen Trimala is saying and what a Bodhisattva is practicing and teaching. And in this way, not explicitly but implicitly, the Buddha is saying, here is a Bodhisattva, and this is what the Bodhisattvas teach. Last time we talked about the meaning of vows and aspirations, that vows are those things which we make in the present, commit to in the present, and that aspirations come out of the vows that are made in the present and extend themselves into the future. Samadana and Pranidhana. Here you see how the vows of ordination, which Queen Shrimala has made, her 10 vows of ordination, become the Bodhisattva vows, the three great aspirations. And in the same way, when we all take the precepts at our ordination ceremony, whether that be lay ordination or monastic ordination, we are actually becoming Bodhisattvas. We are entering into the Bodhisattva path through the means of these precepts. Because just keeping the precepts for oneself is not enough. The precepts are such that when you take them, what you do is affecting all sentient beings as well. And I gave you the example of, you know, when you stop killing beings, that has a profound effect on you and on them. And it is also true how you practice the rest of the precepts. So in the Zen tradition, you take the 10 great precepts and you immediately step into the path of the Bodhisattva. Then in the sutra, Queen Shrimala calls upon the Buddha to make her eloquent, to give her the ability to speak and to speak clearly about what she has understood and realized. And the Buddha grants her this eloquence. Depending on the translation you read, the most imperative ones are the Buddha saying, "Queen, you shall be eloquent." And he says, you will do this. She asks, and he says, you will do it. He gives her permission, which includes the authority to speak, and explains that just as the Buddhas of past, present, and future have embraced and taught the illustrious doctrine, so now Srimala herself has embraced it and is being given permission to teach it. It has far-reaching merit, great merit, and it includes all the teachings of the Buddha containing the entirety of his 84,000 discourses. And the number 84,000 is a traditional way of saying innumerable. It's a lot. When the Buddha gives Srimala permission to speak, the authority to teach, she speaks of the one vow, which is the embrace of the illustrious doctrine. To embrace it is to hold it closely. And to hold it closely means to accept it completely. And because the Buddha Dharma is so vast and big, this is a huge thing. In the Wayman translation, it says, Queen Srimala appealed to the Lord with these words, "Lord, the Bodhisattva aspirations, as numerous as the sands of the Ganges, are all collected and included in one great aspiration, namely the embrace of the illustrious doctrine. Thus, the embrace of the illustrious doctrine is of great scope." In the Pali translation, Srimala said to the Buddha, "The Bodhisattva vows, which are as numerous as the sands of the Ganges River, are all contained in the one great vow that is called acceptance of the true Dharma. Acceptance of the true Dharma truly is the great vow." And in Garma Sisi Chang, she says, Srimala said, "The Bodhisattva's vows, as numerous as the sands of the Ganges, are all contained in the one great vow. This one great vow is called the embracing of the Tathagata's true Dharma. This embracing of the true Dharma is truly great and vast." This kind of language can really give you some insight into the meaning of taking refuge. Because when you take refuge in a really deep way, you are embracing the one great vow. The one great vow is to embrace the Dharma, the teaching of the Dharma. And this teaching of the Dharma itself, is not something that, you know, we embrace in an abstracted way or just intellectually, but with every part of ourselves, with body, speech, and mind. So it's a big thing because it is so vast. And the sutra proclaims and states that very clearly. The Buddha praises Queen Srimala's insight and means. And he likens her, he likens this understanding to the Buddhas of old. To understand the great doctrine is rare, and the more one comprehends its meaning, the longer one has been practicing and growing deep roots. Remember that I told you that one of the phrases you find in the sutras and in Buddhist literature is that such a person has deep roots. They have deep roots for encountering the Dharma, or they may have shallow roots, which makes them sometimes have great difficulty in practicing the Dharma. It's a nice way of reminding ourselves that when we have difficulty with something, that what we need to do is grow our roots more deeply into the Dharma itself, and not judge ourselves, but just simply say, "Well, I need to grow more here." The Buddha says, in the Wayman translation, "The Lord replied, 'Queen, very good, very good. Your insight and means are profound. Queen, whatever the sentient beings to whom you teach the doctrine, they are rare who will comprehend the meaning. They are ones who for a long time generated the roots of virtue under many Buddhas. Queen, just as you embrace, teach, and explain the illustrious doctrine, in the same way the Tathagatas of the past, present, and future embrace, teach, and explain the illustrious doctrine, have explained and will explain it. Queen, I also, having now attained the supreme revelation of enlightenment, embrace and teach the illustrious doctrine and explain it in many ways. Queen, while I now embrace, teach, and explain the illustrious doctrine in many ways, there is no end or limit to the merits of embracing the illustrious doctrine. The insight and eloquence of the Tathagata are also without end or limit. Why so? Because, Queen, this embrace of the illustrious doctrine has far-reaching meaning and great benefit." And in the Dhyana Paul translation, the Buddha praised Srimala, saying, "Excellent, excellent. Your wisdom, prajna, and skillful means, upaya, are most profound and subtle. You have already for a long time increased in virtue. In the future, living beings who develop such virtue will be able to understand you. Your explanation of the acceptance of the true Dharma is that which the Buddhas of past, present, and future have explained, now explain, and will explain. Having realized supreme, complete enlightenment, anuttara samyak sambodhi, I also speak of this acceptance of the true Dharma. I explain that acceptance of the true Dharma has merits that cannot be limited. The Tathagata's wisdom and eloquence also are without limits. Why? Because in this acceptance of the true Dharma, there are great merits and great benefits." And in Garma Sisi Chang, the Buddha said, "Well said, Srimala. You have practiced the Dharma for a long time. Your wisdom and ingenuity are subtle and profound. Anyone who can understand your words must have planted many good roots in the long night. You speak of the embracing of the true Dharma. It is the teaching of the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. Now that I have attained supreme enlightenment, I too often teach the embracing of the true Dharma in various ways. The merits derived from praising the embracing of the true Dharma are limitless, just as the wisdom of the Tathagata is limitless. Why? Because it is most meritorious and beneficial to embrace the true Dharma." So as we take different versions of the sutra and put them side by side, we see different things being emphasized. As we step back from the narrative of the sutra itself for a moment, here is the introduction of the path of the Bodhisattva. This is crucial because in the embrace of the true doctrine, the Bodhisattva path, the Bodhisattva training is engaged with and has begun. The Buddha likens the experience of the queen who has embraced the illustrious doctrine and is now being given permission to explain it to the Buddhas of old. She is doing it, I am doing it, the Buddhas of the past, present, and future have, are, and will be doing it. And in this way, the Buddha elevates her, which for this time in history, this was probably written sometime between the 3rd and the 6th century, It's huge. He elevates her, a lay woman, to the status of being the spokesperson for the Buddhas, and explains that the past Buddhas, the Buddha himself, and now Srimala, are all teaching the same thing. And he gives her permission to speak. He gives her this authority. She calls and asks him, and he says yes. And he praises her. He praises her wisdom and insight, her wisdom, skillful means, her wisdom and ingenuity. And we want to notice here what this means in terms of the path of the Bodhisattva. When the Buddha gives Srimala the authority to teach, he gives authority to the model of the fourfold Sangha, not just male and female monastics, but also lay women and lay men as well, as practitioners of the pathway of the Bodhisattva. Through Srimala's example, he gives authenticity to the validity and the integrity of practice for the laity. And this is a crucial part of the sutra. Were I the captain of a ship, I would say, now hear this, okay? Because this is where it happens in this sutra. And of course is the reason why we're teaching it. One of the truly greatest, I think the greatest contributions of Mahayana is that enlightenment is for everyone. It's not just for the forest ascetics. It's not just for monastics. It's for everybody, for everyone. Nirvana is no longer the gated community of the elect, okay, after this has been said. It is the gathering place and enlightenment ground for all sentient beings. So in terms of the history of Buddhism and in the history of Mahayana Buddhism, a nuclear bomb just went off here. This is how important this is. And in one sense, the whole religion is still trying to catch up with this sutra. Now the Buddha praises Queen Srimala's wisdom and her skillful means. The path of Buddhahood is traveled by someone who is maturing his or her own practice and wisdom, and who is simultaneously, compassionately helping other beings at the same time. These are the pillars of Mahayana. Mahaprajna, which is great wisdom, and Mahakaruna, which is great compassion. The Bodhisattva knows, because the Bodhisattva has had some realization. The Bodhisattva knows that there are no individual beings to be saved because he or she has had some experience of prajna, which is emptiness or the immaculacy of emptiness. This is prajna. Prajna is the wisdom of emptiness. It is not the wisdom of something, but it is wisdom without anything. And this also, this realization of emptiness and that there are, because of emptiness, there are no sentient beings to be saved, is the origin of these verses that you read in sutras like the Diamond Sutra and other places, which say there are no sentient beings to be saved. Dogen talks about this in some of his discourses as well. Prajna teaches that there is no individual self. There is nothing separate. There are just dharmas. You know, dharmas which are component things, we call them phenomena. Phenomena. Conditioned individual things. They are fluxes of dharmas. The flowing in and the flowing out of conditioned things. However, in addition to this flowing in and flowing out, there is mutual interdependence. These are the two primary characteristics of the teaching of emptiness, that there is no self. There is nothing separate, and everything is mutually interdependent. And because of this interdependence, or because of compassion, and it's a chicken or a chicken and egg relationship, through this interdependence, there is compassion. Through compassion, there is interdependence. Because of this, through the realization of prajna, the bodhisattva works to aid in the salvation of all sentient beings. Why do beings, if they are empty fluxes, okay, if they are empty phenomena, why do beings experience suffering? It is because they do not know this, that everything is empty, that there is no individual self, that nothing is separate, and they do not understand their mutual interdependence. So they run around thinking like, speaking like, and acting like an individual self. They suffer from the illusion of separation or of selfhood, and thus experience themselves as suffering beings. The bodhisattva, through wisdom and through compassion, aids to help everyone to realize the emptiness of this separation. It's not that everything is empty and there is nothingness. It is that everything is empty of separation and is therefore not two, that everything is completely unified and mutually interdependent. It is empty of separation. It is empty of selfhood. It is empty of suffering. Thus, there are no sentient beings, and there are no sentient beings to be saved. Because salvation is, and will be already accomplished. And we just haven't gotten it yet, that it's actually here. This is how the bodhisattva, how he or she helps others. The way in which the bodhisattva compassionately responds to suffering is called skillful means, or upaya. So for the Mahayana practitioner, to enter the gateway of Mahayana, if it were a gateway, on one hand you'd have the pillar of Mahakaruna, great compassion, and on the other side you'd have the pillar of Mahaprajna. And the relationship between these is upaya, skillful means. In our monastery here, and in our tradition, the first scripture that we recite for the day is the scripture of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. And this is the scripture of great compassion. Okay. It's the first thing you start with for the day. Interestingly enough, the most recited scripture in our monastery and in generally in Mahayana monasteries is the scripture of great wisdom, the Heart Sutra, which teaches the wisdom, the heart of emptiness, the heart of prajnaparamita. So here again, compassion and wisdom flow together. They dance together, with compassion seeming to lead, but also being constantly supported by wisdom. It is compassion which leads one onto the bodhisattva path, and it is wisdom that aids compassion by teaching how to respond appropriately, effectively, and selflessly to beings in countless ways. And this appropriate action, this effective action, this selfless action is the practice of upaya, skillful means. It is through wisdom that we realize our oneness with all beings. There is no ultimate difference between them. It is through compassion that we learn to aid all beings. So the bodhisattva can appear anywhere and help anyone, even those who are creating suffering. Because the evil characteristics of such beings, and in Buddhism, evil means those who, evil means the creation of suffering. The evil characteristics of such beings are not inherently real. We cannot say in Buddhism that somebody is bad to the bone, although they may act like it. Okay? Their, quote, evilness is inherently unreal. It is not separate from the rest of us. In practical terms, even though the evildoer must be restrained, perhaps even incarcerated, their life is not separate from our lives. Also, in the same way, the merit of the bodhisattva path is also empty. So it takes away any sense of, merit or pride or specialness. Today I'm going to be really good. Look at me. I'm so good. We used to talk in the early days about sometimes see pictures of saintly people with their, head illuminated. And Reverend Master would refer to this as the purple pie plate. And any of her monks who were feeling themselves to be particularly virtuous, she'd say, "Oh, your purple pie plate is really shining today." Just to get them just to give them a hint that perhaps that they are that the merits which they feel are bursting forth from them are perhaps not as great as they might think they are. Compassion aids wisdom by inspiring a life of offering and service to other people. Shantideva speaks of a bodhisattva who commits a deed leading to hell as a necessary part of helping someone to realize a more wholesome and balanced life. You know, we all think, it's sometimes, you know, why on earth would you want to help these people or this person? The person helping them is, whether they know it or not, on the path of the bodhisattva. Such and such a person does something that's so heinous and terrible, and indeed people do, you know, heinous and terrible things. The idea of throwing them into a room and, you know, tossing away the key can appeal to even the most virtuous person sometimes. But in terms of the teaching of emptiness and mutual interdependence, you can't do it that way, because their life is not separate from our life. And even though you have to restrain people in certain circumstances, at the same time, one also has to practice the way of the bodhisattva. I remember watching once on the news, they were doing a story on a prison that I think was in Oregon somewhere, and the those who were in for violent crimes and who were in for life were engaged in a program of making stuffed toys for children out of scraps of material. And there was this man sitting at this sewing machine. He was huge. He had long, dark hair tied in a ponytail. Huge arms, tattoos, you know. And here he is making a little elephant. And they asked him, you know, how do you feel about what you're doing here? And he looked at the man who was interviewing him. He said, you know, in my life, I have really hurt people, and this is my way of giving back to them. And you see that, in that, you see the pathway of the bodhisattva actually operating. Also, the bodhisattva path is not a license for what the French call chacon à son goût, which I am not, my French is non-existent, which means to each his or her own taste, each person should do as they like. That is not what the Buddha Dharma teaches and not what the bodhisattva path teaches. The bodhisattva path is full of compassion, full of the purity of meditation practice and a deep belief in karmic consequence. So the important thing to understand is that here in the sutra, the Buddha is proclaiming the bodhisattva path through Srimala's example. And because Srimala is a laywoman, a layperson, it is basically the proclamation, the validity of the and the authority of the integrity of Buddhist practice for each and every person. And because of the varied way that one's life works itself out, that in the practice of the way, one actually, as long as one makes the attempt, one actually never leaves the path of the bodhisattva. And that the merit of what one is doing is actually increasing towards Buddhahood all the time. I think that we will stop there today, because we're about to go on to another section, and I don't want to start something and then stop it. I was thinking about at the beginning of the ceremony, the teaching of the Avatamsaka Sutra, which teaches the oneness within the difference and the difference within the oneness. And thinking about how the Buddhist way, the practice of the Buddha Dharma, permeates each and every aspect of everyone's life. And how our lives, if we are sincere in practice, are expressions of the way. And how the way can be expressed in everyone's life, in all of its myriad individual forms. And it also reminded me, this is when I'm supposed to be mindful and focused, my mind is wandering along. Last night on the news, watching a group of three ministers. One is an imam, an Islamic imam. One is a Christian pastor, and the other is a rabbi, who after the September 11th tragedy got together and said, you know, we really have to promote the oneness of religions, and also that religions are practicing nonviolence and compassion. And so they do speaking engagements together. And you have this wonderful expression of the oneness within the difference and the difference within the wondrous, within the oneness, because they come in, they sit down on, each of them sits on a chair, sits on three chairs, and each one of them takes their legs and crosses it over the other at exactly the same time. And it makes the point that in one simple gesture, everyone is in complete harmony. And surely we can be the same as that. So, however innumerable beings may be, I vow to save them all. However inexhaustible the passions may be, I vow to transform them all. However limitless the Dharma may be, I vow to comprehend it completely. However infinite the Buddha's truth is, I vow to realize it.